Jay sort of started the meeting out by saying, look, I know we're all competitors, but we need to come together on this. And I said, look, Jay, excuse me, but I just don't see it that way at all. We're not competitors. We're partners, right? We're the board of directors of golf.
Welcome to The Spin, brought to you by the Confederation of Professional Golf, the one-stop golf podcast fueling your hunger for eye-opening conversations and industry insight, and offering backstage passes to the inner mechanics of the global game.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Spin-Off, my regular chat show with interesting guests from across the world of golf. Today's guest is someone that I look up to both personally and professionally. In fact, he's one of the most respected, admired and liked people in golf, which is definitely a hard thing to achieve. Wherever you go, whoever you talk to, I think there's always a fond word that can be said about Seth. CEO of the PGA of America. Delighted to welcome you along today from, looks like, sunny New York. Thanks, Seth.
It is. Yeah, I'm in New York City, land of dreams. But thank you for that kind invitation, Ian. I think you're way too kind. But if you could call my mother and let her know that, that would be great. It's great to be with you and be with my friends at CPG and around the world. So thank you for having me. I'm flattered to be on.
Obviously, early start there. I think 8 a.m. Well, I don't know, actually. Maybe an insight into you as a person and as a and in your work life. Is 8 a.m. early or late for you?
It's post-workout. Let's put it that way. So I've usually gotten up and gotten organized and had my bit of exercise because I the days get away from you, and then that's when I kind of get my head set for the day and then move on.
So just to get things started, a couple of weeks ago, I had the pleasure of being in your company, both on and off course, at the Monaco US Celebrity Golf Cup, as the name would suggest, in Monaco, which was not the worst place for us to have to be. We managed an honourable half, played in the right spirit. So we'll start with, I guess, your love of the sport, your love of golf, and kind of how it started and what it means to you.
Yeah, I came to the game a bit late. My parents were both teachers. My father was a coach. I played for him on a number of teams. I played three different American sports through college, or tried to, until I lost my knee. And then after school, you know, I played a lot of tennis, more on the club level, just because I thought it was good exercise. Sports were my life and grew up that way. And as I was working, I squeezed in a bit of tennis. And then I blew out my shoulder playing, you know, over 30 baseball, which was probably a bad decision. At which point, you know, I'd always played a bit of golf, and it was really the last thing I could compete in, if you will. So I defaulted to it like a lot of other people do as a second sport, and came to absolutely love it on so many levels. Our oldest son is a good player. He was a very highly ranked junior, played in college, trying to play professionally now, and so as he started to get serious about it, it became, you know, something that took me to my family as opposed to away from my family, and I got more competitive, and I started to compete in a number of amateur things, not at the highest level, but local levels kind of things, club level, and really enjoyed it, and got down to, you know, I don't know, 3 or 4 handicap sort of level, which I haven't been able to totally maintain. But I absolutely fell in love with the game and everything it means, but more importantly, kind of what's around it, right? Like, you know, the lessons learned, the relationships that you form, the time that you spend with great people in beautiful places, you know, just the places that it brings you. You know, if you think about it, there's nothing else that we really do for 4 hours, which is a conversation as we had the other day. You know, it was a friendly competition, but we spent 4 hours walking, you know, alongside each other and talking and competing. And, you know, you don't say, let's go for a 4-hour walk too often, or let's go, you know, have a 4-hour lunch, or, you know, whatever it is. And so I think it's, you know, unique. And as I think about what golf has meant to me, I met my wife on a driving range. I can't remember the last relationship that I've had in business or in life that doesn't have some aspect of golf, whether I've met him through the game or I cemented it through the game or we played after we'd met. You know, it's just an incredible way to spend time together. And I really believe it's the biggest engine for good in the world. And I mean that in terms of not only the charitable money that, you know, Monaco raised and is raised every day. Every other sport borrows us to raise money. Every professional athlete seems to find golf as their second sport or eventually passion. I once was with Jim Courier, and we were playing at the same course. We kind of got in a rain delay, and I'm obviously a great player, you know, major winner, et cetera. And, we sort of started talking, and I said, well, do you play much tennis anymore? And he goes, no, I really don't. And I said, well, must be hard to find people to play with that, you know, are fun to play with and at your level. And he goes, no, that's not it at all. And I said, well, really, what is it? And he goes, well, when was the last time you heard a tennis story? Right? The implication being that, you know, golf is what has become his passion because, you know, that's what creates the stories, right? And so I just think, you know, like I've never been more flattered to have an opportunity than this to impact, you know, more lives through this beautiful game. And again, the lessons learned, the values, everything about it is extraordinary. And I've come to believe it's the greatest game on earth.
That's interesting. I remember hearing from one of your predecessors, Joe Steranko, who said he always found time to play golf at least once a week, which I've used to tell my board the same thing. But because it is that opportunity, when we're talking about how great the game is, it's great for us to be involved in it. And if you can use that, not just personally, not just socially, but also in business, then, that's a key element, as you say, to spending quality time.
I couldn't agree more. And I think so many of our professionals out there and us get so tied up in our day-to-day that we forget to play the game. And if you know, we should all be playing the game. And it, what better way to spend time with your membership or a new acquaintance or, and if we can't play, who can, right? I mean, when I was a banker, it was taboo, right? As a golfer, you know, in the golf industry, you know, it should be mandated almost, not just encouraged, that we play the game. That's the whole point. We've got to set the example.
Absolutely. The reason we fell in love with it in the first place. But you were also in Monaco. Well, the main reason to be in Monaco is you were this year's honoree to collect the Lifetime Achievement Award. You made a fabulous speech. There's a few things that stuck with me, which I'll mention. But you received the award from a great friend of yours, which made it even more special, Prince Albert of Monaco. Perhaps just expand on that a little.
Yeah, he was we were schoolmates. He was a year behind me. We met on the soccer pitch or football pitch when he came on board and became good friends. He's a wonderful guy, very, you know, shy guy actually. And at school, he was very much keen on being Al, you know, not Albert of Monaco, but you know, another student. And he carefully curated that, if you will. It became impossible at some point. Given who he was, but we had great adventures together, and I've been lucky to visit him in Monaco a few times over the years. We actually, as our senior year in college, we did a trip through France and Monaco to play against a number of the local clubs, and got a lesson in the game from most of them. And then we did a reunion about 15, 20 years later after we graduated in the National Stadium of Monaco, where we played against one of their club teams. And it was an amazing experience and one of the more humiliating athletic experiences of my life, playing against professionals at the age of 40 or so. It was not ego enhancing, but it was spectacular. And he's a great guy.
Yeah, no, he is a great guy. Although I struggle to refer to him as Al, as you do, but that was great to see the bond there that still exists.
Yeah,
you, during your speech, hopefully you can remember, but you said there's a few things that you believe. And I think that, you know, that stuck with me, your own strong personal why, and both your personal and professional why. I can't remember what you said, but you made five or six points that you really believe kind of motivate you and get you up in the morning.
Yeah, I think I said, and it's certainly how I think. one of my early, role models, if you will, or not early, late role model, was a fellow named Peter Ubroth, and you may have heard of him, but he ran the 1980 Olympics. It was in Los Angeles. It was the first Olympics. It was actually profitable. He was the commissioner of Major League Baseball. He is also the orchestrator of buying Pebble Beach back from Japanese ownership and restoring it to U.S. ownership. He's made a fortune in a number of travel and different industries, and done another. Cleaned up the U.S. Olympic Committee and chaired that for a while. So he's had like this really interesting career. And I once asked him. I always made a point of having lunch or dinner with him, once or twice a year, just to kind of pick his brain and just sort of be around him. And I once asked him, I said, how did you, what are you most proud of? And, he had a great answer, which was, well, I like to think the most important thing I do is the next one I'm going to do. And I think that's a great way to go through life. And then I said, well, how do you choose your opportunities? And he said, well, I've always chosen them by how I can have the most impact. How can I change, what needs the most sort of help and what can I do? And that really struck me. I realized that sort of what I care most about in life, frankly, is making other lives better and creating jobs, creating opportunity. And that sounds like I'm trying to be selfless. It's really selfish. It's what sort of motivates me. When taking this job, I'll never have a bigger opportunity to impact more lives. If we can make 28,000 lives better that are the largest sports organization on earth and at the PGA of America, we can make millions of lives better through the game that we just talked about. And so that's an incredible gift to me, an opportunity to do things. And so I think, my parents, suppose taught me that, you're supposed to leave every room better than you found it, right? That's an important thing, that it's much more important to be human than it is smart. It's another thing that I think that's really important. And I think, having lived through the pandemic and having run a bank through 9/11 and the financial crisis, you realize that those are what, gets everybody to the other side. You have to worry about the human being first. And obviously you want to make great decisions and do the right things, but you have to look at everything through that lens. I always have had a golden rule as well, which is, no jerks allowed. I think you need to make sure that you're setting an example of behavior that is important, is everything. We all kind of know what a jerk is when we see it. I've found that, the occasional sort of public execution of them is a pretty good motivator to the rest of the team. In that, particularly if there's a great producer who's not behaving well, and you send the message, your team, really begins to believe it. Which brings me to, another sort of thing that I 100% believe, and I think it's rooted in my history of sports and my father who taught and coached me, is life's a team sport, right? And everything you do is about being a great team player, making that team better. There's times when you need to shine individually, but it's never about being a star. It's about making the team better. And teams are what wins. And at the end of the day, the best thing you can do to any institution is to create a culture, which will then create a brand. And that is the umbrella of all that is team. We're in an individual sport in theory, right? But you hear more and more professional players talking about the we. The we of a caddy and a player, but the we of their support system, whether that's their family or their coach or their trainer or whatever. It's a team sport, right? And I think life in every way is that. It's about your partnerships, and our partnership with CPG and other groups around the world. We strive every day at PGA of America to be the best partner we can possibly be, and whatever that you know, means that day and that year is what we try to be. We want to behave like we want to be treated. So, you know, that's how we live.
I was actually fortunate myself to meet Peter's daughter, Heidi, who's a great woman, a great lady as well. Been very successful in her own right. I met her in Paris, thanks to our president, Pascal Grisot, at the Ryder Cup, and a fantastic family. But this idea of being a great partner and collaboration is something which, I guess, hit me since the first time I met you, which was in Paris in 2018.
The Junior Ryder Cup,
in fact. Yeah, at the Junior Ryder Cup, that was it. Yeah, which was at Disneyland Paris, which was great. And Mike Wan spoke recently on his appointment to the USGA about being a valued partner as well. And I guess is that something which just sticks at the heart of you as an individual and also as the organization?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think, you know, relative to Mike Mullen and yourself and every other organization, if we were starting out today and creating the ecosystem of golf, we would not have it look like it does, right? It's confusing. It's an alphabet soup of organizations. You've got the USGA, the PGA of America, the PGA Tour, the RNA, the LPGA, the, you know, the CPG, the, you know, the various PGAs around the world. And so to the outside world, it's confusing. A lot of people think, frankly, that I have Jay Monahan's job at the tour, and sometimes that's convenient. But that doesn't mean that we can't operate as one ecosystem, right? And so when I first walked into the room, you know, it was around the rules controversy of a couple of years ago when the professionals were struggling with, you know, the changes. And I remember, you know, as we went in, it was at the players, and Jay sort of started the meeting out by saying, look, I know we're all competitors, but we need to come together on this. And I said, look, Jay, excuse me, but, and I'd only been, I don't know, in the job for 4 or 5 months. And I said, Jay, I just don't see it that way at all. We're not competitors. We're partners, right? We're the board of directors of golf, right? We need to think about Golf Inc. In you know, again, our job is to leave the room better. And by that, not only my PGA professionals, but the game. And we have to be stewards of that game and work together to do that. And I don't mean that it was that moment that changed everything, but you know, that's how we're operating. That's how we operated last year in terms of trying to get the game back, playing in both in a professional level and a recreational level. We made sure, and Jay was amazing about it, of creating, you know, realizing the ecosystem that the majors had to have a spot, even though, you know, every time he gave up a week, it was costing him money to do that. And that's how we've operated. I think we have this very unique time, moment in time, where in the past it had been competitive and had been, you know, everybody keeping to their own swim lanes and being selfish about it, to all of us looking at the overall pool and sort of how do we make, you know, that is how do we make the pool lead better together, right? And because we're, you know, everybody in their seat now is very like-minded. I don't mean we don't have individual opinions or, you know, obviously individual priorities, but you know, Jay and myself have a 20-year history of friendship. But he was my tournament director, first tournament director when we started the Deutsche Bank Championship, you know, roughly 20 years ago. And I've worked with Martin Slumbers for a dozen years at Deutsche Bank. And I knew Mike Davis for, you know, 15 to 20 years. I've come to be very close with Mike Wan, Molly McHugh, who's now the LPGA head, and Jay and I share the same high school. Our daughters just graduated on the same day from the same school. So, you know, we have an ecosystem and an opportunity to run the game as that board of directors uniquely, and it's time. And by the way, I should include Guy Kinnings and Keith Kelly for sure, who I knew Guy through the RNA a bit, but I didn't, and golf, but I didn't know Keith until he took the job. But they've become trusted partners with everybody. You know, it's an amazing time in the game. You know, we're in this raging bull market globally for the game recreationally. The game showed off last year. We were the first back professionally, you know, certainly US and Europe and the rest of the world struggled with COVID, obviously, a little longer than the U.S. did in some ways. But you know, it led for all of sports. It's led recreationally. You know, I'm not sure of all the stats everywhere, but month over month, golf in the U.S. is up 40% over like times. So I don't mean that's sustainable, but it is this moment in time where the game has finally had this this boost that we've been looking for so long. It's as if Tiger Woods just burst on the scene for the second time. You have this incredible surge in the game. And what are we going to do differently this time that we didn't do last time to make sure that that's a generational growth, not just, 6 months of fame or whatever. And so we've come together as an industry to do that. We last summer, I sort of called Mike and Jay, and we need to make sure this is generational. We have an opportunity, but we also have an obligation to both grow the game in an absolute way, and also to have the game look more like the rest of the world, because we haven't been as diverse in the game as we should be. Obviously, we're all thinking about social justice issues around the world, and the U.S. from the U.S. perspective, last time I checked, 50% of the planet is women, and so obviously you want to have more participation there, and from the U.S. perspective, 50% of the next census is going to be of color. And so if we're trying to be a growth, it's not just the right thing to do. It's the absolute necessity. You can't carve out half again and think that you've got, an addressable market that's going to be interesting. Right. And so we have to figure out ways to be not only more inclusive, but more invitational, right? Not just welcoming, but let's go seek people. And I think this, this wave and COVID's, lesson of golf being a safe practice, and one that is sort of perfectly suited to social distance and outdoors and all the health benefits, mental and otherwise, convinced the CDC last year that it could be part of the solution, not the problem. And I think that sort of launched our ability to do it. So, it's a long answer, but I think, look, at the end of the day, it's on us to take advantage of this moment in time and opportunity to really make a sea change in the game. And I truly believe that, not the only right people, but great people are in their seat in order to, myself aside, in order to work together to make that a reality.
No, totally. And that's at the leadership level that you talked about there. And it goes all the way through. I think across our 42 member countries as we are at present, golf is enjoying the same boom in most of those, which is great. Our job is to make sure it's accessible, inclusive and sustainable. And that's what we're doing. And that's not just our job. We look closer to home, and I guess our two respective organizations, the role of the PGA Pro as an influencer, and you mentioned it earlier, I think that's absolutely key in whatever territory we're in. Having skilled, knowledgeable, passionate people is the way that the game is going to develop most successfully.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. Our professionals are the frontline workers, right? And they're the ones that, have to, someone can say, oh, I'm curious about golf and show up, but somebody then has to create the experience for them, at first blush, as well as, how do I keep that person in the game going forward? One of the reasons I think the PGAs around the world should have, we really should be the most informed, most balanced voice for the game, right? In the sense that we're touching it at every level. We're touching it at the first shot you hit. We're touching it in the middle. We're touching it at the very highest level. We're partners in the Ryder Cup, obviously through the Ryder Cup Trust. And so, in the PGA Championship and our women's event and, our senior event and the best, one of the best junior events in the world. And, so we touch it at, sort of every level. And by we, I mean all the PGAs, certainly. We do from a U.S. perspective, you do from 42 countries. And so how we mobilize that army, how we educate that army, how we reward that army, allow them to be certain, enable them to be great entrepreneurs that are growing the game and benefiting ultimately from that, is what we do every day. So yeah, do we run the Ryder Cup and the PGA Championship? Sure, but that's 2 weeks of the year, right? The 52 weeks of the year, we are out. We're out there every day, growing the game, and so. The best way we can do that is by, educating, mobilizing, enabling our professionals to be the best in the world at what they do, and it's both a trade and it's a service, right? And so there's an art form to doing both.
Totally. And the other thing, obviously you talked about inclusivity and diversity of both the game and I guess PGA memberships, etc. On the other side as well, in terms of the business of golf, obviously in commercial partnerships, it's become very, very important. You've had a seat at both sides of this, as CEO of Deutsche Bank in the States, and now as a rights holder, a significant rights holder with the PGA of America. Are you seeing big shifts in that market, in the sponsorship market, and in the way brands approach their partnerships?
Yeah. First of all, on the inclusive part of things, we have a basic belief that if we can make the game look a bit more like the world in every form, and as you say, that's not just players, it's workers, it's our supply chain, it's everything that we do, then maybe the world will begin to behave a little bit more like the game. And God knows we could use that at this point. And so we have organized working groups across the industry with, club manufacturers, management companies that own multiple golf courses, all the golf bodies, to do just that. We have, six working groups that are working verticals through, sort of player development to marketing to supply chain to employment, et cetera, et cetera. And that's really exciting. That started last summer, and there's over 100 people that are, sort of doing it in addition to their day job, working on these committees to drive that. So I think it's the first time the industry has ever really come together to try and sort of sustain this growth, which is exciting. In terms of partnerships and sponsorship, we actually again, I talked about it earlier just as a principle, but last year in the pandemic, we approached every partner and said, okay, how are you doing? Can we help in any way? And in certain cases, some businesses did very well, and certain businesses struggled, right? Through it. And so we worked with each of them to either do more or less, but make sure that we were the best partner we could be, because then you're creating kind of these lifetime relationships as opposed to squeezing the lemon and saying, okay, you owe us this and you need to pay us. It was much more of like, okay, what can you sort of afford to pay? What's in your best interest of your business? And we'll worry about it once we get through to the other side of this thing, how to take care of all that. And we did that, and our partners, I think, were very appreciative in it. And I feel like we have stronger relationships and a stronger brand, and certainly a stronger understanding of each other because of how we behaved, as much as, what we thought. So we actually picked up a number of sponsors in the pandemic rather than losing any. I think, again, why do we, sort of back to what our mission is, right? Our mission is to serve our members and grow our game. Our assets allow us to do that, right? So we want to polish the diamond of the PGA Championship and all of our other majors. We want to turn the Ryder Cup into a 24/7 brand, because that gives us the means to go fulfill our mission, right? And so that's why the brand becomes so important. At the core of what we are and the core of your professionals in your 42 countries, like having that on your shirt is what gives people comfort that they're with an expert, right? And the same way that you wouldn't Yeah, you might go to a, in the U.S., a minute clinic for a common cold, but you wouldn't go if you had, you know, a serious disease, right? You'd go to an expert. And that's what we think, you know, the PGA kind of represents, is we're the golf doctors, if you will, every day. And so in dealing with partners, we want to elevate the game. We want to lead in the same way we did last year because as a game, because then that will burnish golf and then people will be around golf. And then we want our brand within that game to stand for, you know, excellence and team and all the values that, that we hold so dear, so that we're, you know, sponsors are attracted to us. And I think, you know, that leadership, you know, golf is cool right now. Golf is growing. Golf's in a bull market. And so we have, you know, again, ironically, because of, you know, through a pandemic, but we have more interest in our brand than we've ever had. And I think our brand is probably stronger than it's ever been because of, you know, how we behaved in that crisis. And I think, you know, having lived through a bunch of them, that's, you know, you make sea changes. It's a challenge, but it's an opportunity. And you have to approach those crises in the way of, you know, how do we come out of it stronger? Not necessarily financially, but again, culturally, brand-wise, and relationship. And again, that's how you behave, right? Is what's going to define that concept of being more human than smart.
I think that's it. I think, as you say, they're organizations with a true rather than a kind of forced social purpose have really, in a way, benefited through this pandemic. You say we've got more partners than we had before. And I think, again, it's because I'm for being, and in the same way as you, a reason for being is to enrich people's lives, to life enhance through the sport. We both do a lot of things, not necessarily for commercial gain. We still have to generate the revenue, but we do a lot of things in developing the game and enhancing people's lives because of that. And I think we're seeing partners gravitate towards that at this time more than ever.
But people are watching, right? And they get it. And you're 100% right. You know, and by the way, you know, doing things for the right reasons is fulfilling. It's fun. It's what, you know, gets you up in the morning. And, you know, yeah, of course, we have to be smart, you know, commercially. But, you know, the world is looking at things in you know, very different, in a different prism than they have in the form of, you know, doing the right thing is really the only way to do things. And I think, you know, that's, you know, and I actually believe the next generation is going to be even more of that, right? Like, I think, you know, the social awareness of millennials and below is extraordinary. It's just part of how they think. And we always had it. I think our generation had it as you know, one of the check boxes, but maybe it was, you know, a check instead of, you know, part of DNA and fundamental. And I think the generations that follow that's really the starting point as opposed to an aside. And I think, you know, doing the right thing is going to be not only more important, but frankly, more valuable going forward. And hopefully, you know, we'll make society a better place.
And we touched upon it. We're both very proud to be involved with the Ryder Cup. That's looming on the horizon and hopefully a big party ahead in Whistling Straits. From what you can share, Seth, an update for September?
Yeah, we couldn't be more excited. Look, we're fully expecting a full fan experience. Things could change. Obviously, there's variants and, you know, things that are potentially could happen, but we've been talking to the local authorities and state and local authorities, as well as obviously federal authorities. And you know, the U.S. is ahead in terms of vaccinations, certainly than, you know, most of the world, and you know, more open, if you will. You know, having been in Europe last week, as you say, continental Europe in the form that I saw it. It was a couple months behind where we were a couple months, you know, 2 months ago, let's say, but it's catching up fast and hopefully that continues. Our biggest fear is just not so much getting the teams over, but getting the fans over. We always want to have, you know, a great cadre. We always sort of say, you know, 25% of the fans at any away game you want to be for the away team. You know, you're watching in the Euro Cup now. You know, you want to have that tribalism that makes the Ryder Cup so special. So we're hoping that's, you know, borders are something we can't control, right? We do know that there's plenty of European fans in the U.S. and hopefully they can make their way there. So that's our one, you know, caveat would be that. But I think in the world, like Ryder Cup is the one asset in golf that's bigger than golf, right? It you know, the majors are majors and they're hugely important. But the Ryder Cup is different. It's visceral. It is, it's national pride or continental pride. It's that tribalism. You know, the first moment on the first tee is, you know, the greatest moment in sports, perhaps in some ways. And, you know, ironically, before it's not the last putt on the last day, which sometimes can be, but it's that first, you know, first shot on the first day. And that's electric. And, you know, that's an incredible gift from our forefathers and mothers that gave it to us. And we want to protect that asset, you know, with everything we've got, right? Because it's an incredible thing. And so I think the world and, you know, we're about to have the British Open, which, you know, we'll have a lot of fans and, you know, probably won't be quite what, you know, we all hope it is, but at least we're having it. The Olympics is going to happen and that's great, but it'll be somewhat subdued because of, international fan participation. And we're hopeful that the Ryder Cup becomes kind of that true moment coming out party of, okay, see you later, COVID, and here, you know, here's the world stage and have it be what it should be and even more important than it's ever been, in my view, because of what we've all been through for the last, you know, kind of year and a half. And so we're planning for that, hopeful for that, and we're expecting, you know, a full-on party.
Can't wait, and let's hope we can get as many many European fans over there as we can. Yeah. As you say, it's a huge part of it. And I guess fitting in that so much of your emphasis here has been about team. And, you know, the Ryder Cup is the ultimate team event in golf, both inside the ropes and outside the ropes, I think, from the way we coordinate Ryder Cup Europe with ourselves, the PGA, GB and I, and the European Tour, and how we collaborate between Ryder Cup Europe and PGA of America. It's the ultimate team event, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. And you're absolutely right. And it's been a wonderful thing to you know, be a part of. And I think we just keep getting better at it, right? We're obviously doing global, worldwide sponsors now, which is completely coordinated and all sorts of things to be that much more, you know, obviously we're going to compete friendly way in the, when we get there, but the rest of the, you know, years building up to it is totally cooperative, as you say. And enhances, you know, what we're doing. As I said, I think the opportunity with the Ryder Cup is to make it more of a 24/7 brand than a once every 2 years brand. And I think we're all aligned on how we do that without overexposure, but making sure that, you know, it's in front of mind of people sort of all the time, right? And I think there's ways to do that. And working together with yourselves and the European Tour and British PGA is exactly how we're going to do that.
Yeah, that little gold trophy's really got some meaning behind it. We can't wait for September. On our doorstep, just to kind of finish off, obviously the Olympics is upcoming. We've had the news today that Japan's in a state of emergency. As you say, it's not going to quite be what we hope, but it'll still be a fantastic event. Open next week. Tips for success. Let's finish on a high note. Who are you tipping for next week, Seth?
That's a great question. I haven't really haven't thought about it too much. I think you got to mention Jon Rahm. for sure, who not just because he won the U.S. Open a month ago, but is obviously European, and I think this is a an important moment for him. I kind of like Tommy Fleetwood too, and I know he's not totally informed, but he shows up for the great events, and I actually think Lee Westwood will show well. I'm not it's a long bet to think that he could necessarily win it, but I think he'll show well. I really do. And from a U.S. perspective, Justin Thomas and Xander Schauffele is always in the mix.
Oh yeah, Xander, every major. Yeah, absolutely. And what a great story Lee would be with his great pal. Yeah, Darren Clarke being the last one at St. George's
as well. Right. It would be great.
Got a little inkling on a couple of South Africans as well. Louis Westhuizen and Brandon Grace would be my outsider.
South African is Gigo, who has had an unbelievable run, and I don't think he's afraid of anything. We actually, my son played, and I was paired with him as his amateur in the Dimension Data Pro-Am a couple of years ago in South Africa, and he was playing as a professional. I was an amateur, and we got paired with Gigo, and he was just getting going, and you could see the talent, and yeah, what a run he's had.
Yeah, I think a great way to conclude. Thanks, Seth. For me, continuing to increase collaboration across the game, positive evolution from across all of our organizations. For the benefit of all, and most importantly, I guess, the benefit of golf, then that's the way forward. And as always, it's been a pleasure to chat. And I've learned a great deal, as I always do when I'm in your company. And looking forward to, sadly can't be with you next week. I know you're not traveling over, but looking forward to being with you in Whistler.
Yeah, I'm disappointed to miss next week and be there, A, because it's the, it's an amazing event, B, to support you and Martin and everybody. As we all know, the rules are still so restrictive that it's hard to do it all. But I'll be watching dutifully on television. And again, thanks for your part in this ecosystem. You've been a great partner. And I think it was the ninth screen that we met on. And ever since that moment, when we bumped into each other and didn't know who each other was, I think it was my first day on the job. So appreciate that and your stewardship of the game and across the world and look forward to the being in person sometime soon. Thank you again for a couple of weeks ago in Monaco. It was a special very special week for myself and Jane and to reconnect, and I was very flattered and honored to be there, but to be honored was beyond anything I deserve, but humbling and very much appreciated. So all the best. Have a great week next week. And thanks to everybody out there who's listening. And keep playing golf and keep being a team player. It's everything. Every life's a team sport.
Thanks for tuning into The Spin, brought to you by the Confederation of Professional Golf. Don't forget to subscribe, stream, and share this and all other episodes via the CPG website, cpg.golf. We all look forward to seeing you next time.